Hello, everyone. Welcome to Green School. And it's the podcast that's looking at the changes we as individuals can make to help fight climate change. And today we're looking at plastic packaging and food, which I'm super excited about, as this is the topic that inspired me and Taylor to do the podcast. And that's an incredibly complex topic, as I found out when trying to research this myself. So Taylor's got some really kind of interesting facts and figures to give us some context about the scale of the problem and to kick us off. So yeah, over to you, Taylor.
Yeah, exactly. To give this topic a little bit of context, let's think about the fact that on a global scale, we produce 78 million tons of plastic packaging each year. That's roughly how much 8,000 Eiffel Towers weigh, if you can picture Paris like collapsing under the weight of thousands of Eiffel Towers. Now, many of you will have seen Blue Planet 2 or other programs that discuss the enormous impact of plastic waste. So it might not come as a surprise that of that generated plastic, 40% of it is landfilled and another 32% leaks directly into the environment. But what might surprise you is that although 14% of all plastic worldwide is collected for recycling, only 2% actually ends up being recycled back into the original product. So why is there so much plastic packaging ending up as waste? And what can we as individual consumers do about it? That's the question we're aiming to answer today with our amazing guest, Dr. Rachel Rothman. Rachel is a senior lecturer in the Department of Chemical and Biological Engineering at the University of Sheffield. She's one of the project leads of Sheffield's Plastic Redefining Single-Use Initiative, and also involved with the Many Happy Returns Project, which focuses on reusable plastic packaging. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi.
So to start out, could you just tell us a little bit about your background, your current work, and why you decided to pursue research in the sustainability and plastic fields?
Sure. So I'm a chemical engineer by training. And I think one of the things you learn as a chemical engineer is how to take a systems overview or a systems approach for things. And when we talk about plastics, taking that systems overview is really important. And I'm sure we'll discuss some of the reasons for that as we go through today. But yeah, I was a chemical engineer and I do a lot of work looking at life cycle assessment, process analysis, systems analysis. And I think because of my other hobbies, I love being outdoors, I love running, I'm an orienteer. The sustainability field really appeals to me. So how can we make our planet more sustainable? And being able to use the technical skills I've learned in chemical engineering to help make the things I love doing in my spare time better is a real bonus of working in this field. And I do work in lots of areas of sustainability as well as plastics. So I'm the co-director of our Grantham Centre for Sustainable Futures, and we train postgraduate students to be kind of next sustainability leaders. And we lead big interdisciplinary research projects, and it's that interdisciplinarity that's key, because all of these problems within sustainability, including plastics, you can't solve just with an engineer or just with a social scientist. Everybody needs to work together, and that's what we really try and do in the Grantham Centre, is bring people together. So both the projects you mentioned, the Redefining Single Use and the Many Happy Returns, we have engineers working with scientists, working with psychologists, working with human geographers, and it's by bringing all those aspects together that we can actually come up with solutions that might make a difference. So that's what I find exciting working in this field.
Well, actually, just what is the Redefining Single Use Initiative? I mean, can you maybe give some examples of I don't know, like products or projects you're working on?
Sure. Yeah. So there's a lot of hype about plastics at the minute and how bad plastics are, and inherently, it's not the plastic that's the problem, it's what we do with it that's the problem. And plastics in many ways are amazing. Our laptops, our phones, etc., they wouldn't exist without plastic in them. And it's very easy to villainize plastic, thinking just about the packaging and forget about all the good things we have with plastic as well. And plastic's great because it's light, it's cheap, it's durable. And actually, what we're using it for is single-use applications. And one of the properties of plastic is that it lasts a long time. And so we're in a way misusing it by using it for things we only want to last for a really short amount of time when it was designed in the first place to last a long time. So our Redefining Single-Use project was looking at, well, actually plastic's great, but in order for it to really reap its benefits, we need to use it more than once. So how do we move to a reuse system or a recyclable system, or what system might be best? And what system's best for different plastics really depends on the use and the plastic itself and the infrastructure that's available where you are. So there's no one silver bullet that's going to answer everything. There will be different answers in different places and different best solutions. And that's where the life cycle assessment I do comes in, because it's so important to be able to analyze, is this intervention we've thought of actually going to be beneficial environmentally, or am I trying to do something better but inadvertently actually making it worse, which is quite easy to do when you think about the plastics and the waste sphere. And following on from that redefining single use project, that's where our Many Happy Returns project came from, and that's all about the reuse side of things. So how do we reuse things as many times as possible, get them returned to reuse?
It's actually obviously interesting, because obviously the whole point of this podcast is for us, me and, you know, Taylor, to kind of look at how we as individuals can make changes. And also, I suppose it seems like often the change seems to be that has to be with industry, because you feel as an individual it's too small to make any difference, right? So, I mean, just from all your work you've done, we've obviously come onto it from a plastic packaging point of view, but as a general point, I mean, how much of a change can we as individuals make, and how important is that versus, say, putting all of the pressure on the industry to change and us kind of not taking responsibility personally?
Yeah, it has to come from both sides. There's definitely things we as individuals can do differently. And you might be one individual, and you personally making a change, if no one else makes that change, won't make a big difference. But if you can then encourage other people to make that change, or you show it's possible by making that change, then that will, you know, make the biggest change overall. Lots of people added together makes a big change. And I quite often get asked by friends, oh, you know, I'm thinking of buying this, should I do this or this? My brother said to me, well, would it be better to buy beer in a glass bottle or an aluminium can? And my friend says, oh, should I buy a plastic shopping bag or a paper shopping bag? And the bag one's an interesting question. We've worked with some supermarkets recently looking at their bags, and there's well over 1 million bags sold every year. An insane number of bags are sold in UK supermarkets every year. And the answer is, well, the question shouldn't be, should I buy the paper one or the plastic one? What you should do is reuse the bag you already have and not buy a new one. And that's the answer for almost everything, which is best this or this. The best one is the one you already have. Don't throw something away if it still functions. Use it and use it and use it until it can't be used anymore. Then throw it away and buy a new one. And at that point, work out which one the best new replacement is. But we really have to, the whole kind of reduce, reuse, recycle that we learn in primary school and then somehow forget between the ages of like 10 and 30 or 40 or something.
Yeah.
It's so important. And that reduce is really key. And so the more we can use resources we already have and things we already have, the better.
I love that. I think that's a fantastic point. And so having lived in the UK for 5 years and now I'm back in the US, I actually see the difference quite a lot. In the UK, I'd say it's quite common for people to bring reusable bags to the supermarket. But here during coronavirus, they actually said you weren't allowed to bring reusable bags into any supermarkets. And so a lot of people got into the habit of just buying the plastic bags again. And I think it's hard to then break that habit again later down the line. So it's really interesting how these different things affect how we use plastics.
Yeah, and it's crazy with the bags, because a supermarket did a survey recently and a third of the people buying a bag said they had the bags with them, but they left them in the car. And then it was over a third, actually. It was more like 40%. And another 40% had bags, but they'd left them at home and forgot to put them in the car to get there. And another 10% actually needed the bag. But imagine if all of those people who had the bags but forgot them had remembered their bags, then instantly you've cut the footprint of bags to 10% of what it was, because you don't need to buy all those others. And so that kind of getting people to engage with this behavior and remember things is so important. And it is less convenient, and it involves a mind shift and a remembering, I'm always going to put my reusable bag in the car. Once it becomes your daily practice, it seems strange that you wouldn't do it, but making that kind of shift in behavior is quite important to get people to engage with these.
Yeah, I almost feel like it's a whole different podcast in itself, like the psychology of it. And actually also how there's such a drive for, like you said, convenience, quickness. I mean, I work in tech, and it's all about getting things really quickly to people. So yeah, and that's obviously, that kind of brings us on to our current topic. I mean, first of all, Rachel, why is it that we use plastic for packaging around fruit and vegetables? And also, what type of plastic is it? It just doesn't ever seem to be recyclable. So what are its properties? and, you know, kind of what's the environmental footprint of those that are being used?
Yeah, the what type of plastic is a challenging question to answer, because most of the thin plastic that you get in food packaging, it's not one single type of plastic. It's made of lots of layers that are stuck together. And by having all those layers stuck together, that's what gives you the properties of the packaging. So if you take a crisp packet, for example, you want your crisps to be crispy when you eat them. There's a metallic layer on the inside. There's about 11 layers in total. You've got metallic layer, you might have a polypropylene layer, a polyethylene layer, you've got resin sticking them together. And what those layers do is they prevent moisture getting in, so your crisps stay crispy. They prevent the oxygen getting in. They have, or each layer has a purpose. And by the design, the clever design of that multi-layer packaging is what enables our products to be the products they are. But that also makes them very hard to recycle, because in recycling, what you want is pure of a single type of plastic. So your Coca-Cola bottle, for example, the plastic one's made from PET. And if you go to PET recycling, you only want PET going in there. You wouldn't want your crisp packet made of all these different types of layers going in with the recycling, because it contaminates it. And then you lose the properties of the plastic if it becomes contaminated, and then you can't use it anymore. So the challenge we have really is that all of these, or most of the packaging, is designed for use. It's not designed for what happens when you've finished with it. So they're all designed to keep your food fresh, to make your food last longer. People always talk about cucumbers as an example. That's just a single plastic wrap, but it'll keep your cucumber fresh for at least three times as long as if you don't wrap it in plastic. So there's a really good reason there for wrapping it. And yes, you end up with a really small amount of plastic waste. But imagine you bought that cucumber and then it went bad. The footprint of the food waste from chucking away the cucumber and getting a new one is actually more than the footprint of the plastic. So this is when I was talking at the beginning about this whole system. This is what you have to look at. It's not just the plastic. It's what impact does the food have as well. And in lots of cases, like the cucumber is a good example, right? The amount of plastic you have is really tiny. If you were to take that wrap off a cucumber and weigh it, your kitchen scales would probably not even pick it up because it's so light and your scales aren't calibrated for that small amount of weight. And so the footprint of that is way less than the footprint of growing the cucumber, shipping the cucumber, etc. So there's a question there about, is it actually worth it? To you know, does it therefore make sense to put the plastic on the cucumber so you have less food waste? And that's a really tricky balance when we talk about food, is how you minimize the food waste while also minimizing the packaging, because in lots of cases they're not the same. Like using a bit more packaging might minimize your food waste. Now, not all packaging is equivalent, shall we say, and the packaging we would want to keep is the packaging which makes the food product last longer, elongates the life, keeps it fresh, and minimizes our food waste. And the packaging we would want to get rid of is the packaging that doesn't have that purpose.
Mind blown, by the way, Rachel. Taylor, I'm sure you've studied this lots. I have not really thought of that at all. If you just take that cucumber packaging, though, if there's just the cumulative amount, let's say me as an individual, I probably buy a cucumber a week, so that's, I can't do the maths, four times something or other, lots. And then over my lifetime, does that not cumulatively, I'm just thinking, you know, just if I piled that plastic up on this desk, you know, over the last 10 years. And I mean, for example, how long generally does it take for that plastic to decompose, or to, can it even decompose in the environment?
It wouldn't decompose in the environment, no. So it would end up either in landfill or incineration. But you have to ask the counter question of, imagine, I don't know what day you do your shopping, but if you did your shopping on a Sunday every week, but actually you really wanted cucumber in your sandwich, which you were going to have on Friday, and if you bought that cucumber not in packaging and it had gone off by Friday, one, you can't eat your cucumber anymore in your sandwich, but also you've now got an entire wasted cucumber. So it's that balance again with convenience, isn't it, about when you're going to use it. If that one blew your mind, how about this one? There's 8 billion tons of plastic in the world at the moment, which is more than the weight of people, or more than the kind of number of people. And if you turned all of that plastic into cling film, so something like the wrap on your cucumber, you could cover the entire world with it and still have 25% spare. Or if you turned it into a roll of cling, 30 centimeter roll of food wrap cling film, you could go to Pluto and back 170 times with it.
That's just crazy. And actually, what with that plastic, right? So what happens to it? I know it sounds a silly question. If it doesn't decompose, does it just, unless we blast it off into space or burn it, which I don't know is bad, or whatever, does it just forever stay?
Well, this is the problem. And this is the problem with plastic, is it's designed to last. It's not designed to be used and chucked away. So if you put it in an incinerator, it'll burn and it'll turn into carbon dioxide and other waste products. If you put it in landfill, eventually over time it might start to decompose, but pretty much it'll just stay there. Depends on the conditions in your landfill. The other problem with plastic, not just the carbon footprint of it, is when it ends up where it shouldn't be. So if your plastic, if you put it in your rubbish, it gets collected, it goes to whatever your rubbish facilities are, whether that's landfill or incineration, it's dealt with in an appropriate manner. If you just were walking along eating your food product and you think, oh, I've got this wrapper, there's no bin, I'll just chuck it away here, and it becomes litter, that's a whole other problem you get with plastics when it's out of that managed waste system. And that's when you see the pictures of turtles with the plastic from the top of beer cans around their necks, or whales that have swallowed carrier bags and stuff. That's when the plastic has ended up in a place where it was never intended to be in the first place. And because we use so much plastic, that makes it more likely for some of it to end up where it shouldn't be. And particularly when you look at different countries around the world, not everyone's as lucky as we are to have a managed waste system. And when you see the piles in some countries, that's because there is no waste collection. And so they use plastic, and what else is going to happen to them other than them ending up in a big pile that then gets burned, for example. So part of the trouble we have is how we get rid of the plastic in a sustainable way. And that's why the reduction and the reuse is so important, because the more you can use it, the less waste you generate. And it's actually not a plastic problem that we have. It's a plastic waste problem. Because when it's in use, the plastic is great. We love it. It's doing the job we need it to do. It's when we're trying to get rid of it, or when it ends up out of a managed waste system, that's when it becomes a problem.
Yeah, I think that's a really excellent insight, and kind of gives us an idea of what we as everyday people can do. Just to follow up a little bit on the plastic pollution side of things, what are governments and kind of big plastic consuming companies doing to address this plastic pollution issue, especially around plastic related to food packaging?
Yeah, good question. So in the UK, the extended producer responsibility is coming in. And what that basically does is put onus on the producer for what happens to that thing at end of life, which hasn't existed in the past. So in the past, companies can make whatever packaging is needed for the product, and then they can kind of forget about it. Whereas now what the EPR does is it makes people, or it makes companies, have to think what happens at the end of life. And the money that's generated through that will go to developing the waste infrastructure within the UK. I think for a long time, companies have put little symbols on their packaging saying kind of, don't throw me away. But a lot of people don't know what the symbols are. And even if they did know, wouldn't pay attention to them anyway. And I think there's some things we can do about removing them. So if we go back to the plastic bags again, we've obviously got the plastic bag tax in the UK, and that started on the kind of flimsy single-use carrier bags. They were 5p, then they were 10p, and different places now have put them up different amounts. But talking to one supermarket, they were saying, oh, well, the bags cost 50p now, and people are still buying them because they're so used to having bags. It's not really put them off. But then some other people are saying, well, I'm not paying 50p for a bag. I just wheeled my trolley to my car and I put the food in. And I'm thinking, yes, in that case, that tax has worked because it stopped you buying a bag that you didn't need because the bags were in the car. And so I think there is things that we can do to disincentivize use when it's not really needed, and also to try and help people dispose in the correct way. But it can't all be on the consumer. Some of it has to be on the producer as well. So I think there's an onus on producers to, and this is what the UK Plastics Pact says now, is there's targets for how much plastic has to be reusable, recyclable, or compostable by 2025. And that's really made people think, well, how do I, one, have more recycled content in it in the first place? And two, how do I make it recyclable? And if your multi-layer product was not recyclable before, what will you do differently how can you engineer it differently in the first place or design it differently such that it does become recyclable? Because there is so much confusion about what can be recycled and where it can be recycled. But the encouraging the companies to make products in a way that they are recyclable is quite important.
Yeah, no, that covers so many interesting points right there. Jake, was there any last questions?
Well, yeah, I mean, probably so many, actually. And I think I'm still trying to get my head around it, which is good. I think the whole point of the podcast was to try and help people like me understand the issues that you and Taylor are or have tackled every day. I suppose that the first thing is that when you were talking about the, for example, a crisp packet or my cucumber packet is not just one type of plastic. And actually, this is kind of what made me kind of contact Taylor, is that I was trying to understand what type of plastic it was like around my tomatoes or something. And I literally couldn't find it. And I got buried in scientific papers that I didn't understand. And now I get why, because it obviously wasn't one type of plastic. First of all, are they recyclable? I mean, the plastic packaging that we're using around our vegetables and stuff or our crisp packets, if they're made of so many different layers of different types of plastic, is there any way of ever recycling that type of plastic?
So there are companies that will recycle crisp packets. A good example is TerraCycle, and there are specific collection points. What you can't do is put your crisp packet in a normal recycling bin, because if it gets collected with curbside recycling, it will get sorted out and it will go into general waste and landfill, because anything that goes in a recycling bin that isn't actually recyclable in mainstream recycling will end up in the general waste system again. So if you went to a TerraCycle collection point, you could recycle your crisp packet. Now, there's a lot of complexities. I mean, as you've gathered, the whole thing is very complicated around recycling. The best type of recycling is if you can take that product or packaging and recycle it back into the same thing. And that's made you a circular economy. So you've taken something, you need to process it, reformat it, and then it ends up being used for the same job. And a good example is your plastic milk bottle. They're made from HDPE, high density polyethylene. And any given milk bottle is made from about 30% recycled HDPE and 70% new. So all those kind of bottles that go into recycling, some of it will go back and make a new milk bottle for you. But you still need some new stuff in there to get the structural integrity of the bottle itself. If you give your crisp packets to TerraCycle, they'll be recycled. But what they effectively do is chop them up and reform them and turn them into like plastic posts or plastic benches. So you're effectively making like wooden posts, but out of plastic instead. Now that's still a good use for it. But at the same time, there are only so many plastic fence posts and plastic benches that we need in the world. So that's often referred to as downcycling, because you've taken the product, you have recycled it, but you've not been able to turn it back into what it was to start with. You've now made something else with it. So you haven't made a circular economy, you've just made the linear economy longer. Now, making the linear economy longer is better than just stopping with the one product. However, it's not as good as making it circular. So I guess that's a kind of extreme example of a true complex multi-layer. Something like your cucumber film is likely to be a low density polyethylene or something like that. This depends on the products. That kind of film can be different types of plastics, but it sometimes is just a single kind. It can be recycled, but not by very many places. So in Sheffield, if I put it in my curbside recycling, it wouldn't be recycled. There are some other places that will recycle it. So it's not as simple a question as, can it be recycled? It's more, how would it be recycled? Or what does the consumer need to do in order for it to be recycled? And I think that complexity is one of the reasons that it's something like less than 2% of carrier bags get recycled. And I think in the main, that's because people don't know, how do I get that recycled? They have this bag, they can't put it in their recycling bin at home. It's not necessarily always obvious that if you take it to store, there is this recycling point to collect them. And until we get that kind of system better known, it's hard for everything to be recycled as much as it needs to be.
Yeah. And well, actually, on that, what's then the impact of people putting the wrong stuff into recycling? You know, I suppose almost like virtue recycling, where you feel bad about it and you hope that you put it in. I know I've done this. You know, I see it and I'm like, no, it must be real. I must be able to recycle this. says, like, check your local authority. I'm going to, right, I'm going to take a punt on, in my case, Wandsworth, where I live. Come on, Wandsworth, you've got this. But then you haven't. What's the impact of me, say, putting that in?
Yeah, it's different in different places. It's quite often sorted using laser technology. So you can use infrared systems, which shine the laser onto whatever the plastic is. It sends the signal back, and that will then tell you, yes, this plastic can be recycled or it can't be. Some places do an element of hand sorting. It depends. Some do it on a kind of density. It depends what you're sorting. But the sorting part of recycling is actually the most energy intensive part of it. Because even if you're only collecting the PET and the HDPE, the two types of most recyclable plastic, you still have to separate them. And if you go to a recycling plant, what you'll see is that probably 95% of the space is to do with the sorting and the separating. And a tiny proportion of the space is to do with the actual, what I would consider recycling. A lot of the energy use is in that sorting, separating stage. So the better we are as consumers at sorting and separating, the less energy is needed to do that sorting and separating in the recycling plant. And that, again, comes back to the taking a systems overview. So it might take me more energy to separate it, but if it takes the plant more, less energy, yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the challenge, if you do get what we would call contamination in, so the wrong type of plastic in, is it will affect the physical properties. Now, a small amount of contamination is okay, because a small amount of the wrong plastic in a lot of the right plastic is still okay. But the more contamination you get, you might find that it's not as strong anymore, or it's more likely to crack or more likely to split up. There's lots of different things that can go wrong if you end up with contamination in there. And if you end up with too low a quality, you just have to get rid of it all.
That's crazy. Is that it? Well, this is probably a lot more complicated than I actually realized until speaking to you. And I think Rachel, I was expecting a silver or a golden bullet to this issue, and it's clearly far more complicated than I realized, which is just kind of blowing my mind, all of this. So I'm just going to take a second just to let it all wash over me. So yeah, Taylor, I'll hand back to you while I just gather my thoughts.
So Rachel, thank you. You've given us so much amazing information here. Just to kind of sum everything up, could you give us like your maybe top three takeaways in terms of what we can do and what sort of impact that will have?
Sure. So I think the first thing we've talked about is there is a lot of plastic in the world. And if we turned it all into thin film, we could wrap the whole Earth at the minute. And if we keep going at the rate we are, then by 2050, we could wrap the whole Earth over 6 times. Which is just crazy, the amount of plastic. But that doesn't mean that the plastic is bad. What we need to do is to change our attitudes and the way we use the plastic. Plastic is great. It's so light that it reduces the impacts due to transport and shipping. It's durable. And we need to go back to those properties that made it so great at the beginning that it lasts a long time. And we need to use it in a way that we want it to last a long time, not that makes it single use. So it's the single use and the waste that's a problem, not the plastic itself. With that being the kind of first point, the next thing is that means we need to reduce the amount of plastic we use. We need to reuse everything we've got as many times as we can. And we need to take ourselves away from the kind of fast fashion, keeping up with the trends, change something every day, every week, etc. It really has to flip back to reuse as many times as we can. And that applies to everything, not just plastic. If we can't reuse it, we should be recycling it. And ideally, we need to recycle in a way that it can return to be used as the same thing. And failing that, we recycle it in a way that can turn it into something else. And I think those are probably the key messages to take away, because it is a really, really complex area. And working out what the right thing to do is can be really difficult. And I get lots of questions from people about what's best, how should we do this? And simplifying it in a way that takes that complexity away is quite challenging sometimes. But I think if you always resort back to the reduce, reuse, recycle, that will help you get your head around what might be best.
I think that touches on some things that really start you thinking about how all of these different aspects are interconnected and how we need to be thinking of so many different things when making decisions. But the reduce, reuse, recycle I think that's something we can all really strive to accomplish. So while there is lots of complexity, there are also simple things that we can do. So it's nice to know that there's kind of a balance there. So to wrap up, we kind of wanted to try doing our green scores, and we'd like to do two green scores. The first one is talking about how easy it is for us as consumers to make sustainable decisions about a certain product. So in this case, we're going to be talking about plastic packaging in supermarkets. And the second green score is basically how much of an impact that will have. So how much of an impact will our sustainable decisions around a specific product have on wider issues like climate change, plastic pollution, and so on. And we're going to go through different colors. So black is going to be really bad. You know, we can't make any good decisions about it, and it's going to have no impact on changing these wider environmental issues. And then it goes to brown, which is kind of like bad, but not quite as bad. Gray, which is not really sure, it could go either way. Forest green, which is on the good side of the scale. And then lime green, which is our gold standard. So we ideally want to hit lime green for all of these things.
With lime green is almost controversial, isn't it? Because some people wouldn't like lime. But, you know, we do, don't we?
And it's nice and bright. And I feel like we need to be thinking about a bright future. So that's
important. That's very true.
So in terms of the first green score, so how easy is it for us to make decisions? I'm going to give us a gray on plastic packaging from supermarkets, because as Rachel has said, we can reduce, reuse, recycle, but it's not always obvious. There's multi-layer packaging that might be confusing what we can do with it. In this case, it's usually you have to throw it away or send it to a special recycling facility. Whereas for plastic bags from the supermarket, that's a fairly easy decision. So bring your reusable bags. Try not to forget them in the car or at home. I know that's difficult. I've done it myself. So I'm going to give it a gray for usability, we'll say. I don't know if both of you agree with that.
Yeah, I agree, actually, because I think it's very different for different products. When we talk about packaging in supermarkets, there's such a massive variety of products and packaging types. And I think some of the things people know to put plastic milk bottles in the recycling. People get it. They have a really high recycling rate. People don't know what to do with the wrappers that you get cookies in or crisps in. And so there's a huge variation. So I think that kind of gray in the middle is probably about right.
I think I started super positive. I thought, we're going to have a golden bullet to this. And then I went negative again, and I was definitely brown area. And I'm probably gray too, but I think there are some shoots of like positivity there, which made me think there are some real changes. And also actually, if you are going to recycling correctly and actually the impact they can have, I'm going to go gray, but I think there are a few areas, Rachel, that made me think forest green. So that's a massive cop-out answer. I know, but that's where I'm at with that one.
All right, so the second green score, which is talking about wider impact, I'm going to go kind of positive on this and say we're going to do forest green, because as Rachel was discussing, simply reusing a piece of plastic another time means you're already cutting the carbon footprint of that material in half. And furthermore, if we are being more cognizant of how we are disposing of our plastic, so not littering, that's already cutting down on plastic pollution quite a lot. So I think there's a lot of room for positivity here in terms of the wider impact that our everyday decisions around plastic packaging can have.
I agree, but I probably go a little bit more gray than forest green. Not because I'm not trying to be positive, but we come from a privileged position of having good managed waste systems that we can utilize, and we can make a choice to use them properly and to, you know, learn about our recycling and engage with that recycling. And there's lots of countries in the world that don't have that privilege and don't have that opportunity. So if you look at this from the point of view of the whole globe, you're definitely more in the gray, maybe tending to brown. Whereas if you look at it from the point of view of the UK or the US, then maybe you are from the grey tending to forest green. But I think it's different where you are in different bits of the world.
I think it's quite complex. I am actually going to go forest green as well, only because I feel like the awareness is increasing And I feel like the only way that that any of these issues will ever change is through public pressure of some description, whether it's direct or whether it's just in a kind of a latent pressure or whatever. But, you know, that's kind of the way that I think things will change. It's by people starting to boycott goods, change their behaviour, whatever. So I'm going to go Forest Green from a perspective in terms of me as an individual and the fact that I know more than I've ever known. This is obviously completely blown my mind, and hopefully what our listeners do. But I think people are more aware of the issue now. I hope that drives change. And I hope also that largely comes from, you know, richer countries, because we've got, like you said, we've got more power, more privilege, more options. I mean, you're living day to day on the breadline, the last thing you're thinking about is sustainability. You're just thinking about living. So I hope that there's going to be a redistribution of, I think that people are more aware, and hopefully that will lead to change. But I think it will require a lot of pressure from everyone to kind of drive some sort of societal difference. But yeah, that, I'm going Forest Green. I'm going to stay positive.
That economics is a really good point though, because in some circumstances at the moment, the more sustainable packaging costs more. And I'm lucky that I can choose to pay more and have more sustainable packaging, but not everybody is lucky to be able to make that decision. And I think there's a responsibility there on the producers and on the government to make the thing in the more sustainable packaging cheaper, not even the same, but to make it cheaper, not to encourage us to do it, but to make it possible for everyone to engage with it. Because there's no point in having a system that half of the people in your country can't engage with for whatever reason, not because they choose not to, but they just actually can't do it. And that social aspects are so important, and to make whatever happens to move to more sustainable to be just for everyone. And that's a whole other conversation we could move into. But I do think it's really important for the legislation and the producers to make sure that the sustainable choice is available for everybody and not just those who can afford it.
Yeah, kind of combining that social justice and climate change, like, it's a really interesting combination, something that we really need to talk about more. So I'm really glad you touched on that, and hopefully we'll be able to maybe do a podcast on that in the future. So it's great to start getting these ideas flowing. But yeah, so that's it for our podcast for today. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us all of your amazing insights.
Yeah, thank you, Rachel. Thank you so much for coming on. That was awesome, and I've learned so much. I mean, my brain hurts and I can see how complex the situation is now. You're an awesome speaker, so thank you for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome. It's fun. I like talking new things.
Yeah, thank you so much.